Moreover, for most members of Parliament, the reason they went to Parliament was to secure legislation to take care of their own local district, this kind of particularist interest, which we've seen in other representative assemblies on the European continent. MPs were, of course, also interested in securing royal favour. Indeed, the parliamentary opposition leader, as he's often called, John Pym, instrumental in the resistance to Charles I in the early 1640s, was actually deeply involved in the administration of crown lands well into the 1630s. He was part of the system, if you want to look at it that way. Moreover, within Parliament, the House of Lords was often at least as important, if not more so, than the House of Commons, and many of the MPs in the House of Commons were in fact clients of prominent lords. John Pym, for example, was patronized by the Duke of Bedford. Well, if it all worked so well, the Crown respected the Parliament's role, and Parliament wasn't interested in taking over power from the Crown, why was there a civil war at all? And this brings us to those three important weaknesses in the Stuart monarchy, which I mentioned earlier. The first of these, I think, we can call the problem of multiple kingdoms, the fact that the Stuart monarchs ruled not only England, but also Scotland and Ireland as well. The Stuarts weren't unique among European rulers in ruling kingdoms with different religions. There were a lot of Catholics in Ireland, Presbyterians in Scotland, and Anglican church members in England. But they were unusual in that in each of their kingdoms there was a powerful interest group which preferred the religion of one other kingdom to the religion which was official in the kingdom where they now lived. To review at least the history of this, when Elizabeth I of England died in 1603, she had no children. She was therefore succeeded by her cousin, James VI of Scotland, who now became James I of England. Scotland's basic difference with England, its most important difference, was religion. There were also some legal differences, but for our purposes, it's the religious difference which matters. Since the mid-16th century, Scotland had been dominated by a staunchly Calvinist church, which had a decentralized Presbyterian organization. Each church was ruled by a council of ministers and lay elders at the parish level, and then by an ascending system of regional and national councils, often called synods or presbyteries, and so on. That's where we get the name Presbyterian from. Now, early in his reign, James had actually succeeded in grafting bishops, who wouldn't normally belong in the structure, onto the top of it. But it's important to stress that James had added bishops to the Scottish Church really only as moderators of synods. The Scottish Church, in terms of the actual distribution of power, remained a decentralized system rather than the system in England in which the Anglican bishops were kind of princes of the church. In terms of religious diversity in Scotland, I mentioned there was a Calvinist majority. It is worth adding, just as a footnote, that in the Scottish Highlands, on the other hand, and in the northern parts of Scotland, there was a Catholic fringe which did hold out somewhat grumpily against the religion of the majority. Ireland was different from England on religious grounds, but in a different way from the difference with Scotland. In Ireland, the dominant population was Catholic. The English crown had claimed suzerainty over the entire island since the island of Ireland since 1541. But this claim actually had taken a long time to put into actual practice. During the 1580s and 1590s, there had been a series of rebellions in Ireland in which the Catholic rebels often received military assistance from Spain. It was actually only in 1603 that the last of the rebels finally submitted. But despite their military victory in Ireland, Protestantism, or the English efforts to Protestantize the island, remained a failure. And the population, I think, can helpfully be divided into three groups. First of all, the mass of the Gaelic Irish, who remained staunchly Catholic. A group of people, second of all, whom we might call the Old English, who were descendants of medieval conquerors who had come from England to Ireland from the 12th century forward, who were allied with the English crown, but who in religion tended to be Catholic. And then a third group called the New English, who were Calvinists, who had come over from England or often from Scotland, and who were settled in what is now Northern Ireland on so-called plantations from the year 1608 forward. With these plantations, the indigenous population, the kind of Gaelic Catholic Irish, was just simply forcibly expelled from the land and driven off to the west. And then the cleared land was then handed over to the Calvinist settlers. In fact, it's interesting, it mirrors the same process that was going on in New England and Virginia in the same time. That is to say, Calvinists coming in, thinking very little of the people who live there, whether they're Algonquians or Irish Catholics, and then pushing them off the land. That then was the first problem, the problem of multiple kingdoms, which regularly created crises in the Stuart monarchy. The second problem was the religious situation in England itself. And here I think we can stress two kinds of divisions, divisions between Protestants and non-Protestants, that is to say between Protestants and Catholics, and divisions among different within the Protestants themselves. To turn to the Catholics at first, after a series of plots against the English crown, English Catholics had moved into a kind of political quiescence by the end of the 16th century. They were persecuted by so-called recusancy laws, which laid heavy fines on everyone who didn't regularly attend the services of the official Anglican Church. Indeed, after 1581, the recusancy laws made conversion to Catholicism an act of treason and therefore a capital crime.